Truth and Transcendence. Brought to you by Yes, You Now, with Catherine Llewellyn. Truth and Transcendence, Episode 25. The COVID Regime, Understanding the Jabbed. So, as I understand it, over 50% of the world population have had at least one COVID jab, maybe two or even three, and a large minority haven't. Now, leaders need to deal with people in both camps, as it were, those who've had the jab and those who don't. We need to try to understand them. So next week, I'm going to talk about the unjabbed, and this week, I'm going to talk about the jabbed. So the first thing to consider, if we're looking at our organization, our business, and we're thinking about our people, and thinking, how can we get a better understanding of where people are sitting on this particular topic? And by the way, the fact that we're asking that question about something like a jab for a virus is profoundly bizarre in a way. Prior to 2020, this would never, ever have been a question, at least not in any history that I know about. If you know about a situation where employers were considering their people from the point of view of have they or haven't had a particular jab, please tell me about it. Because as far as I know, this is an unprecedented situation. So not only are we in a situation where people are being categorized according to whether or not they've had the jab, we're also in a situation where there are all kinds of value judgments being attached to that distinction or that categorization. So what that means is, as leaders, we need to be as understanding and appreciative as we can be of the thought patterns and the reasoning behind the choices to have the jab or not have the jab. Now, of course, we have a complication now, which is we have people who've had the first jab, the second jab, the third jab, and I don't know if there's a fourth jab yet, but there will be, and as time goes on, there'll be the fifth, the sixth, etc. And in some places, I think in New York, people who've only had two jabs are being classed as unvaccinated. And in some places, even if people have had the jabs, if they haven't had a negative test within a certain period of time, they are classed as unvaccinated. So it's a very muddy field in terms of where people are sitting. However, nevertheless, I think it is still useful as leaders to see if we can actually deepen our understanding of what are the contributory factors to people choosing to have the jab or not have the jab. Because this is a highly emotive topic at the moment. It is a political topic. And in some locations, businesses are actually being mandated to fire people who haven't had the jab. And that is serious. And in other localities, there are people resigning rather than having the jab. So it's kind of a fraught situation. Now, I can't claim to understand why everybody chooses the way that they do. Sometimes I don't even understand why I do make certain choices. So for me to say I can absolutely understand how other people or why they make certain choices, I don't have that authority. But what I can do is lay out some of the factors that are in play in this particular instance. So like I said, this next week I'll talk about the unjabbed and this week the jabbed. So this particular jab is unusual in that it's actually an mRNA treatment rather than a vaccine made up of antibodies. So that's a difference. And as I understand it, this is something that's been rarely, if ever, used before. So by definition, it's in a testing phase at the moment. And traditionally, saying yes to a treatment's in testing phase has never been a given. It's never been something that reasonable people are expected to automatically say yes to. So we're in a different time now where we're all being recommended to take this, and in some places actually pressured to do so because of various legislations. So why have so many people said yes and taken the vaccine? Why might that be? So I'm going to talk about a number of contributory factors, and I would say that it's unlikely that any individual person has all of these factors going on at the same time. It's more likely that each person who's had the jab, whether they've had it once, twice, three times, it's more likely that each of those people has a few of these, maybe just one of them, but, you know, more likely a few of them. So by considering these particular factors, it perhaps helps us to get a bit more of a sense of the landscape we're dealing with when we're looking at a population of people who've all had the jab. Now, also bear in mind that these people are mixing with other people who haven't had the jab, and that also affects them as it affects those people back the other way. So again, it's a complex dynamic. So the first factor is what I call habitual vaccine culture. So nowadays, where we are in the 21st century, for most people, it's a natural and normal part of lifestyle to have whatever jabs or vaccines are offered habitually. So these are people who've grown up having all sorts of jabs all the way through their lives. And whenever they've been recommended to have a jab, they've taken it. And it's habit for them. So for some people, that's enough of a reason to say yes and go ahead and take the jab. Simple as that. Decision made. This is what I do in my life. If there's a jab offered, I'll take it. For some people who may also have the habitual vaccine culture, or they may not, expediency is a key factor. So when we're in a situation where we're being recommended to do something and there's a lot of pressure and popular agreement to do this particular thing, just going ahead and doing it can seem to be the easiest path because you get it over with, discussion over, you can get on with your life. And after that, you don't really have to think about it. You don't really have to engage in doing further research, having discussions about it, and so on, and facing the choice. Because the choice has been made, it's done, you've acted on it, you can then focus on the other areas of your life, which are probably, for most of us, more interesting than whether or not to have this particular jab. Now, to be fair, there are groups of people, mostly older people, or people with other comorbidities who are much more at risk from this particular virus, where it is a very interesting subject for them personally, because they're actually considering themselves and they probably are at much higher risk. So yes, expediency is one of the reasons why people would do this. Now the next one, which we've all heard a lot about, is conditional lifestyle impact. Socializing, working, travel, and so on. Permission to do those things being conditional on having had the jab. Now, certainly in the UK, by the time the jab was available, people were stir crazy. A lot of people were stir crazy. They just didn't want to just get out the house. They wanted to get out of the country. They wanted to get to a beach. They wanted to swim. They literally couldn't bear to stay even in the country for any longer than they absolutely had to. So for some of those people, in order to get permission to do that, having a jab seemed like a small price to pay. Some of those people may have preferred not to take the jab and may have taken it with some misgivings, possibly, but nevertheless they went ahead because they wanted to be able to get on a plane. And that was that. The next one, which is less commonly spoken about, is habitual compliance with authority. In this case, government and big pharma. So some people come from possibly from their background, possibly it's developed over the years for other reasons. Generally speaking, if something's recommended to them by an authority, in this case government, they will habitually comply with that. Complying with that is for them the default, whereas not complying with it would be not normal for them. It would be non-standard behaviour for them, and perhaps very difficult or even impossible for them to do. Now, that habitual compliance may be rooted in a personality pattern of being naturally submissive and compliant, or it may be rooted in a genuine belief that these authorities actually do know best, a belief based on research or conditioning or any number of other factors. So it can be a personality-led habitual compliance, or it can be a belief-led habitual compliance that can take place. Or it could simply be that's because, you know, that's what everyone in the family does, and so that's what we do. This is who we are. Another one, which is almost surprisingly widespread, is the "it's not that important" factor. There are a lot of people who just think, well, it's not that important whether I have this jab or not, so I'll just have it. It doesn't really matter either way. It won't do much to me either way. And these are people who probably think that the virus won't do much to them either way, that the whole thing is a kind of non-issue, and they might as well just do it. It's similar to the expediency one, but it's not exactly the same. The expediency one is, I want an easy life. The not that important one is, I don't care. It doesn't matter. Then we come to another category, which I suspect is smaller than some of the other categories in terms of the number of people who have this one. This is the people who believe that taking the jab is the best thing for them and for their health. I haven't met very many people who actually feel that. There's quite a lot of communication on social media from people who believe it's the best thing for them, or who say they believe it's the best thing for them. But some of those people, I don't think they really mean it. I think some of those people are saying that they believe it's the best thing for them because of the next factor, which is belief that it's best for the collective. So these two things are kind of entangled with one another. The belief that it's best for me to take the jab and the belief that it's best for the collective for me to take the jab. So if I believe that the best thing for the collective is for me to take the jab, I may then decide to claim that I believe that it's the best thing for me individually, even if I don't really feel that. And interestingly, there's another side to this, which is there are people who believe that the jab is the best thing for them individually, who don't believe it's best for the collective, for them to have the jab, who don't believe it makes any difference to the collective. I'm talking about some of the very elderly people I've spoken to who've looked at their chances with the virus and who've looked at what they consider to be their chances with the jab, and they've decided that the risk of the virus to them is higher than the risk to them of the jab. But they don't think that what they do in relationship to that is going to have very much effect on the collective. So that's another different combination. And then, of course, there are people who believe that the jab is the best thing for them and believe that it's best for the collective that they have the jab. Now, why they believe that is, again, very variable. Sometimes these are uninformed beliefs based on what they've been told or what they've been conditioned to believe as they've grown up through life. And in some cases, people have done quite a lot of research and they've found information and they've also looked into their own particular health profile and they've reached an informed choice about the fact that they consider the jab is a good idea for them. And some people have done quite a lot of research into epidemiology and virology and so forth and have come to the conclusion that this particular jab is the best thing for the collective, that as many people as possible take it. So we've got the uninformed and the informed both coming to the same conclusion about that. Now, the next factor, which has been talked about quite a lot, is virtue signalling. Some people take the jab in order to appear to be virtuous. Now, whether any of the other factors that I've mentioned already are in play for those people, what I'm talking about here is doing something for appearance's sake. Doing something in order to appear to be a good and virtuous member of the community. And some people are highly motivated to virtue signal in that way, which is not in itself a bad thing. However, it can actually mask somebody's true ideas about something. And it can also contribute to camps forming in an almost religious fashion, where there's almost a moralistic thing attached to the choice. Another factor is people who've been forced into it. I was talking to someone the other day. He's a gardener. He's in his late 30s. And he's actually had the jab. And his children have had the jab. And the reason for that is because if he didn't have the jab, he wasn't going to be allowed to work. And if his children didn't have the jab, he wasn't going to be allowed to work. And equally, his children wouldn't be allowed to go to school in their particular school without all of them having had the jab. Now, he's very upset about this and actually furious because his particular research has suggested to him that the jab's not a very good idea, not very healthy, and for him and for his children, and also that it's not the best thing for the collective for them to have the jab. So that's what he believes, and he feels he's been forced into it. And there are a lot of people in that particular camp, if you like, or category. Now, another factor, which you might expect to be the one I would speak about first, and that you might expect to be the largest grouping, is fear of the virus. Now, this may have been a large category nearly 2 years ago, but actually I think this category has got smaller and smaller and smaller as the actual mortality rates have become more obvious. But there are still people who are genuinely afraid of the virus for themselves, for their relatives, for their community, for the collective. And as a result of that, they said, you know, I'm so afraid of this virus, I'm going to do anything I possibly can, and I'm going to take this jab. Yet other people are simply caught up in the trend. These are people who will do what the majority are doing, particularly if there's an emotive and exciting and stimulating energy around it, which there is in this particular case. So some people are caught up in the trend. It's the fashionable thing to do. Some people are doing it because they prefer to have their decisions made for them by somebody else. Possibly all decisions, or possibly specifically decisions to do with medical matters. Now, this is widespread in the West now. It's very common, certainly in the UK, it's very common for people to want to delegate responsibility for choices around their medical well-being to an authority, whether that's their GP, whether it's the National Health Service, whether it's the government, whoever it may be. So if you've had the jab, I wonder whether any of these apply for you, or whether there are other factors that I haven't actually mentioned that apply for you. And as a leader, how is this understanding of others' choices important? Does considering some of these different factors help you to get a bit more insight into some of your people and some of their motivations and some of the possibly odd behaviours and communications that they've been doing over this last couple of years? Does this help you understand why some people lose their temper around this subject, or become sullen or depressed or overly excited? Something to ponder, perhaps. So this week has been about the jabbed. Next week, we're going to talk about the unjabbed, which is a smaller group of people than the jabbed. I don't think anyone quite knows what the statistics are, but it's certainly more than 50% of the world population have had at least one jab. So it's going to be less than 50% who haven't. But of course, then there are the people who've had one and decided not to have two, and so on. So next week, we'll talk about the unjabbed, which I would suggest will be particularly interesting for those who have chosen to have the jab, to actually think about, well, these people, why have they not had it? Is it not the obvious thing to do? So thank you very much for listening. Enjoy your reflections and ponderings, and I look forward to seeing you next week. You've been listening to Truth and Transcendence, the regular weekly podcast from Yes, You Now with Catherine Llewellyn. For more information, head to yesyounow.today/podcast.